Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, I hope. We begin another broadcast evening here at the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room like I'm doing right this very minute. Awaiting you will be longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Anatole wandering by just now as well. More to come later. And anybody want to tell me if I'm on? Carol says she's getting something strange on TuneIn, which is not encouraging. Hang on here. Please, not again. Not tonight. We'll just wait and see. Okay, so we've got, I know we've got signal going out somewhere. That's always a plus. Thank you, Carol. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is the 10th day of December, 2015. And a program note to begin with, I will be subbing for Mike Malloy tomorrow evening from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. Oh, for God's sakes. 404, stream not found. What in the... Okay, time out. Let's just fix this right now. Stand by. Okay, so let's try this again and see if it works any better. Ben has reset the streamer, and you may need to reload your player. And I don't know what's going on. That part of it is way, way, way outside my pay grade. I'm told that we're streaming, but only on the 8 and 16K. Ben says he has reset the streamer. Somebody let me know, please, if you're, you know, and let me know if it sounds like I'm the bottom of a barrel, too. Because all of that is stuff that is beyond my control from here in the majestic mountain studios of almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan. All right, yeah. All right, so it's 6 minutes past the hour. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn, and this is a listener-supported attempt at creating a broadcast community. And frankly, I've lost track of how far behind we are in fundraising. It's just been that kind of a week. I know that it is. I know that we are at least 400 behind, and maybe more. And so that's where we stand. Now, I had a reminder, and thank you very kindly for it, to go and put the turkey feather portraits up at the Horn Facebook page. You will see them there. It is the post is pinned to the top. One is already gone, but the two that remain are there. One is for sale. Well, sale, yeah. That's what the artist is doing here. It is for sale, and the proceeds benefit the horn. And the other will go, and one's for sale for $400. The other one has already sold. And the purpose of this was to sort of get us out in front and maybe finish the month of December absolutely flush on all bills and get a clean slate starting in January. So there are photographs of detailed photographs of the turkey feathers over at the Horn Facebook page. Go and have a look. And remember, everyone who contributes between now and the close of the broadcast on Monday gets your name in a hat in the drawing, and one of those two feathers will go to you. The other one, if someone buys between now and Monday, it's your choice of the two remaining feathers, and the third feather will be the one that, yes, okay? Does that make any sense? I hope so. Let's see. Now we're just trying to find out if we're actually broadcasting. Email coming from Danny. I hope. There we go. Danny says, "Hi, Bob. I'm getting you on my TuneIn app and listening through Bluetooth in my car. Slight bottom of the barrel sound." And Jack says, "White rose stream down six after." Okay. Time out. No, I'm trying to get this sorted out to find out if broadcasting, not broadcasting, bottom of a barrel, top of the barrel, fish in a barrel. I don't know. Sounds like two tin cans and a string, Bob. Okay, thanks, Sparky. Thanks. Well, there's not much of a point in broadcasting two tin cans and a string now, is there? At least not as far as I can tell. because everything that... Son of a... Okay, hold on. All right, we're going to try this one more time. Even Vivaldi sounds like it's in a barrel. That is very helpful. Thank you. Thank you very, very kindly. I needed to know that. Okay. So, because what's happening inside, in what I can monitor here, is clean and pretty as a pin, just pretty. So we will try to we'll try to go on. I guess. I don't know. So. I'll hear something in a minute as to how things are going. Hopefully we've gotten a little bit better string going between the two tin cans. King of Cups in the chat room asking, how goes tonight all? Well, I haven't just given myself over to voluntary Tourette's yet, but I'm about a hair on a gnat's ass away from it, but that's okay. Okay. Well, this helps. This is a little bit of Ben telling me we've had hackers again. Was up late last night delousing it. Beautiful. Okay. Carol says you're on, and it's crystal clear. And it only took 14 minutes. Yay! Thank you very kindly, Glenn. Glenn, like Carol, has multiple entries in the drawing Monday evening for the turkey feather. Just a way of saying thank you. And like I said, I know we're at least $400 behind in fundraising. It may be six. Because, like I said, the turkey feathers were meant, the portraits, as I understood the offer, were meant to help us get out there and get everything settled down by the end of the year and start with a clean slate and maybe a little cushion in January. Whatever. I had a lot of stuff actually in mind for the program this evening. Oh, goody. How about that? Who knew? Firefox has crashed. Imagine that. I guess you'll have that. But lo and behold, I know part of this is me. There should probably be medication involved. But I feel like the program isn't even in my own control anymore. It feels like no matter what I do, no matter what I want to focus on, no matter how many stories I have in the stack, it feels like somebody else is driving the programming agenda. I know. Bob, look the other way. Thorazine dart in the neck. Ah. Oh. But it does. I had specific things in mind to accomplish for this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday program, and son of a bitch, if some guy in Arkansas doesn't put a Merkin flag. At least we're making progress. It wasn't the Confederate battle flag, okay? But he also had his urine-colored snake flag with him. when he went to try to crash himself into the University of Northwest Arkansas or something. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very kindly for letting me know that I'm on air at FYINation.com. Hallelujah. Praise Jeebus. But you know, that's what happens. It seems like we can't get a damn program together because of all these godforsaken freedom protectors. I mean, somebody's shooting somebody somewhere, sometime, every time, all the time, every damn day. And, you know, there is other news going on in the world besides Donald goddamn Trump and some freedom protector out there Second Amendment, trying to Second Amendment the world. But there it was. Dadgummit. There it was. A guy who posted online saying that he was suicidal and homicidal, then decided, his name is Brad Bartelt, not Bartlett. Of course not. It's Arkansas. It's Bartelt. Apparently, yeah. I mean, that's the way it shows up on Facebook. Brad Bartelt, not Bartlett, Bartelt. Because that's fun to deal with from a radio spoken word perspective. God bless America. Have multiple civil rights violations of federal workforce Arkansas University and several Arkansas Department of, all resulting from 822-12 accident at ASU Newport. Have multiple malpractice, ethics, misconduct, medical, and other professionals, all also documented. No one, that's all caps when I scream, you know, it's all caps, will even read, much less touch or help due to fear of governmental consequences. Told multiple professionals and people in state of Arkansas, I am suicidal, and now homicidal, which is what appears they want, so problem goes away. Thought I would die from injuries or kill myself by now. Any and all assistance, as well as passing this on to everyone you know, would be appreciated. Flibbity jibbity blabbity bloob. So he drove his pick 'em up truck onto the university campus there and got out with his freedom protector out and was sort of brandishing and menacing, as it were. Meanwhile, there on his Facebook page, if you were to go and find it, you could find a meme like this of the Confederate battle flag. Well, okay, but at least he was flying the American flag when he drove onto the campus there with a couple of things of propane in the back of the truck. But that could have just been, look, that didn't mean he wanted to do no bombing. He's a redneck, okay? He just wanted to, he was just getting his propane in for the winter and maybe to be able to do a little, you know, when it's not real particular cold, that's some of your best barbecue in time. Just fire up the gas grill, get out there, steaks, chicken, maybe some ribs. That don't mean he was no mad bomber. And this was not, now, this is not terrorism. You stop that. It is absolutely not terrorism. It's not, it's not, it's not, so stop it. He's white. And that's why he put up, how many likes and shares can the Confederate flag get? And then, when you are put on a watch list for agreeing with the Constitution, there is tyranny. And again, when he got it, yeah, he had his urine-colored snake flag. Don't read to me! Goddamn numbnut sons of bitches. And so there you are all day long, you know, gonna do a program, got stunned. Oh, look, that's interesting. Oh, hey, look, oh, that'll, hey, folks might want to talk about that. Nope! Jackass with a pickup truck. Tyranny! But he's a white guy, so we won't say terrorism, okay? So stop saying that. Because it's not. He was just a suicidal, homicidal guy who published it and put it out there, and nobody managed to mention it to anybody, and then lo and behold, there he is in the universe, the Arkansas State University goes into lockdown. Standoff lasted for about an hour as he stood there with his freedom protector, Second Amendment remedy, and his urine-colored snake flag. with the buck-toothed, bug-eyed, big-eared, banjo-playing snake on it. Mm-hmm. But right there, that one meme that this idiot, this absolute idiot, posted on his webpage, on his Facebook page. You know how we can't keep terrorists on the terrorist watch list from buying firearms in Merca? You know why that is? There's your answer. When you are put on a watch list for agreeing with the Constitution, there is tyranny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. See, because we've got that Kenyan Muslim usurper in the White House, all these white wingers are absolutely convinced that the keeping people on the terrorist watch list from buying weapons is a way to keep them from buying weapons, because they're pretty sure that Kenyan Muslim usurper has used his Kenyan Muslim usurper secret superpowers to make sure that all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, ammo-sexual, gundamentalists are actually on the terrorist watch list. And so they won't let them buy no more guns. Sounds madder than a March hare, doesn't it? But tell me that also doesn't sound like the thought process of a freedom protector, Second Amendment remedy guy. Potential Trump voter, etc. I'm furious. I really, really am. And as if things weren't interesting enough, let's run back over to the home of American sedition, shall we? I mean, I really do. I got stuff that matters to me to talk about in this program, but I feel like you're talking about this stuff feels like a public service announcement. Watch out. They're among you. They're gunned up to the eyeballs. If you see them, go the other way. Ah, yes. The Citadel. The dear old Citadel. Down there in Charleston, South Carolina. Lovely architecture. Old, old heritage, sometimes rife with brutality. And they got a little problem right now. Well, I mean, it depends. They got a problem with some people. Other people don't think it's a problem at all. I was just having fun. I don't know why we got to be so goddamn politically correct all the time. A woman posted photos online and then was alternately threatened and offered bribes to take the images off her Facebook page. What images, you ask? Well, I'm going to tell you. They are photographs showing a number of Citadel cadets singing Christmas carols while wearing Klan-style white hoods. Yeah. The woman who posted the photos, whose name is being kept anonymous so that no one will come and kill her. You know, freedom. She said she was approached by cadets in the photos who said, yeah, please, lady, I'll pay you money if you won't post in photographs. That'll ruin my career. Well, then don't put the goddamn Klan hood on, you freaking idiot. Yeah. School officials have not commented on the incident. But according to TV station WCIV-TV, Eyewitness Team Action News Coverage Team Witness Television News, the incident is under investigation. One source has reported the first-year students that the people in the photographs are actually knobs, first-year students, and made that conclusion based upon the way they are standing while wearing their Klan-style pillowcase hoods. But here's the best part. Uh, someone described by school president Lieutenant John W. Rosa as an upper-class cadet is also shown in the photo. I can't tell from looking at the photo. He's shaven-headed and looks grainy enough that he might very well be. Hell, he looks like an older guy, like he might be in a street. But no, it's probably an over. Yeah, it's probably an upper class cadet. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, look the other way, America. We don't have a right wing fascism problem. Shucks, no. Heck, no. I mean, these are just good white boys having a little playful fun singing Christmas carols in Klan hoods. Oh, Michael and Madison, are you out there this evening, my friend? You wanna take a run at the Klan Christmas album through the course of the program? Got a few titles for me? Let's see, O Klan, All Ye Faithful. Let's see. I like that though. Oh, Holy Klan. Santa Klan is coming to town. Rudolph the White Hooded Reindeer. I mean, because they were just singing Christmas carols in Klan hoods. That's all. That just makes you feel special and pretty, doesn't it? So America is on edge. This country really is. America is scared. America is mean. Well, no, not all of America. But what we've had going on for the past few weeks is a sort of broad brush manifestation of the fact that this whole country is in the grips of its most hateful, mean-spirited, ignorant people. Up there in the most progressive state in the union, I'm told these days. Minnesota. Well, no, up in northern Minnesota at the Bluefin Bay Resort in Tofte. I don't know. Steer a wide berth around their holiday parties there. 61-year-old Kirk Bigby is under arrest, having at about 12:15, about a quarter past midnight. Oh, well, hell, there's the obvious one. Here's our first Christmas carol coming from Steve in New York. I'm dreaming of a white murka. Mm-hmm. White, no, really, really white Christmas, as sung by the Citadel Freshman Klan Choir. You'll love it. Get two copies and give one away to your friends. Play your own while tinseling the tree. With white tinsel, damn it! Right? Yep. No. Kirk Bigby, age 61, protected freedom at around 12:15 a.m. at the Bluefin Bay Resort. Bigby is from nearby Finland, Minnesota. Well, of course he is. And he and the victim were at a casino-style party for employees of the Bluefin Grill. And they went outside where police report that Bigby came into physical contact with the victim. God only knows what that means. Before he pulled out a portable freedom protector and Second Amendmented the other guy dead in the head. Mm-hmm. But again, don't worry. It's not terrorism. I repeat, it is not terrorism because 61-year-old Kirk Bigby is white, 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 white. Oh, hey, thank you, Carol. This is going to be an excellent album. This will be the best horn production since Meet the Feetles. Silent white, holy white. Ah. Silent white, holy white. All is white. All is bright. Round yon white virgin, white mother and white child. I'm sure the Citadel Knobs can sing much better than I. Yeah, I know, Carol says, just kidding, whites are never silent. No, that thing in Minnesota, no, it was definitely not terrorism. And neither was the thing in Arkansas. Definitely, absolutely not terrorism. You know something else that's not terrorism? It's not terrorism in Plano, Texas. When twice in the last week people put rocks through the windows of your home. A Muslim family moved into a home in Plano, and twice in the last 2 days, they've had rocks put through their windows. They, of course, are maintaining their anonymity because they're afraid that if more Texans find out their name and address, they'll just get more rocks. Because God is love, y'all, and this is America, where we have freedom to throw rocks through some Muslim windows, because Sharia law is real, and it's coming for your mother's Bible. Mm-hmm. Alia Salem is the spokesperson for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. I presume Alia Salem is a she, says, right now we're getting multiple hate crime reports every single day. But you know what? And we've gone there. I mean, Eric Bjorn and I had a long and lovely conversation last night, and we just decided to chuck Godwin's Law right out the window because why not? We're there, people. We are there. Full-on jackbooted fascism is here. And when you hear about Muslim families getting their windows broken, those of us who know history get really, really creeped right up about. Wow. Rocks through the windows. Maybe Plano, Texas. Oh, there's another. Thank you, Jack. Frosty the Klansman. No, okay. This is gonna be a great, great, great. This is gonna be a great horn album. Steve in New York pointing out via email with regard to the wacky young students there at the Citadel. They're first-year cadets, Bob. Well, hell, I know I didn't know racism was wrong until at least my sophomore year of college. Fuckers. Mama and Daddy must be so proud of their precious youngsters down there to the Citadel singing Christmas carols in their pillowcase clan hood. Hoods. One hood only. Mm-hmm. Burning cross on the left. Hoo-ah. Right. No. The anonymous homeowner in Plano, Texas said, more than the damage, it's not the window, it's the terrifying factor of it. It's them trying to terrorize us or scare us. The kids are scared to go up or down alone. You move into a neighborhood thinking, expecting, this is just unfortunate and scary. These people are braver than I am. Because you start with rocks, and then you go to torches. Because we want them to know that their kind and their Sharia law ain't welcome here in Mockingbird Circle in Plano. then of course, there's the woman on the bus recently, screamed at by a white man in a business suit. He ordered her to get off the bus and out of the country. And when she told him to back off, he spit in her face. and it was only when she screamed bloody murder that the driver put him off the bus, and not one person, not one person stepped up in her defense. Not one. Well, for there was no room at the inn for them because they were strangers in that land. Thank you, King of Cups. Rocking around the Klansman tree. Oh, and by the way, as is always so often the case with people, the white wingers scream, "Go back where you came from!" The woman on the bus was born right here in Merca. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from the lowest, slimiest, Cletus-ish white winger through the proud scions of South Carolina families at the Citadel with their little Klan hoods on, singing, how about another one? No, we did that. No, okay. I'll have a Prussian blue Christmas without you. Ooh, that took some work. Sorry, but it extends all the way across the social spectrum and up and down the social ladder. Hey, folks in Iowa, you who keep sending Steve King back to the Congress, if you're not careful, we're going to start thinking that you think the same things that walking piece of human excrement thinks. Story from Talking Points Memo that really kind of grabs you. Steve King was interviewed by TPM, Talking Points Memo, and they asked him if he supported the ban on Muslims entering the U.S. till we can figure this thing out. Till we can figure out what's going on. Complicated. And Steve King responded, "Sharia law is incompatible with the United States Constitution, and so if they want to demonstrate that they're open to being Americanized, the first thing they should do is renounce Sharia law. You won't get Keith Ellison or Andre Carson in this Congress to renounce Sharia law, let alone somebody that's just come out of the Middle East that is someone who has been steeped in Islam for a lifetime." Have yourself a merry little clavern. May the crosses burn bright. There's another one. Thank you, Irish Dave. Jingoist bells. Note coming from Steve in New York, and I worry. I don't want to be a problem. Steve says, "I'm seriously crying inside." Steve says, "Are we just hearing about these ugly incidents more, or is our society really becoming uglier?" Steve, I'm glad you used the comparative form, uglier, because it's true. We are. This is what has happened here in this nativist, nationalistic, jingoistic cavalcade brought on by T-Rump. Is that he has made it okay for people who couldn't say this kind of hateful shit for decades to suddenly start saying it again. They never went away. They're just out now, and they're proud. Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, Steve King says that that Keith Ellison and Andre Carson, two Muslims in the Congress, that they won't renounce Sharia law. Well, why doesn't he ask Steve Israel to renounce Torah law? Why doesn't he ask the Roman Catholic Peter King to renounce canon law? Yeah, I know. See? Sauce, goose, sauce, gander, quack. Okay, honk. What? I'm dumbstruck. Steve Cantaloupe's King, did go on and say, I wouldn't be willing to adopt that specific policy of Mr. Trump, but I'm willing to debate the merits of it, and I think we should. Oh, we're going to teach the controversy, are we? Is that where we are? And almost as if in answer to Steve's previous question, are we getting uglier? Yes. This just landed from the New York Times. Breaking news alert. Americans' fear of terrorism is as high as immediately after 9/11, New York Times CBS News poll finds. Stand by a minute, please. Sorry. I really apologize. I'm coming back. I apologize for the dead air, but I will be back. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I ordinarily do not take, I don't take phone calls that aren't the, program during the program. And under most circumstances, I wouldn't. But this had to do with a thing we're trying to work out with our local local healthcare provider in regard to some care. And I figured if I didn't, I would never get it. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's been kind of a fits and starts kind of night, with the fits part being committed primarily by me. Hey, Irish Dave's got us another. I think this is approaching double album stuff. We've got another Christmas Carol, as sung by the freshman Klansman choir at the Citadel. I saw Mommy kissing Saudi Claus. Or how about "Oh Terror Bomb, Oh Terror Bomb"? Absolutely. "Oh Burning Cross, Oh Burning Cross," says Steve in New York. And as for the fact that these white wingers are out there running all over creation, spouting and spewing their hatred and whatnot. Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver says, "By God, if the gays is out in the open, why can't the Klansmen be?" Oh, we're here, we're weird, get over it. No, it's not working. But so we'll find the thread of all of this in short order and get things back into a. Into some semblance of normality, one hopes. We're coming up on the top of the hour. And that means we'll take a little break, as if I didn't just have one. Let's call this one a reset, shall we? I apologize. I wish things didn't work this way sometimes. I wish we didn't have the tech gremlins. I wish, but it just doesn't always work out that way, does it? No. And of course, we've got the Green News Report coming up, this being a Thursday and all. And again, a reminder, I'll be filling in for Mike Malloy tomorrow evening, so no regular program, no regular Friday on the Front Porch at 6 p.m. Instead, we'll be going at 9 p.m. And, hey, here's a new motto for Canada, by the way, courtesy of Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. We're what America could have been. Yeah, I know. I like that a lot, don't you? Canada, what America wishes it was. Only a few degrees. Well, I can't even we can't even play the "it's cold up there" card anymore, can we? No. We really can't. Great googly moogly. Well, let's. I saw Mommy kissing the Grand Dragon underneath the flaming cross that night. Oh, little town of Bumfuck Stand, how lovely is your double wide. No, okay. Like I said, it's gonna wind up being a whole album, and it'll sound ever so much better if I'm not the one doing the singing. So, hey, we call this Conversation Radio here for a reason. It's fun to talk amongst ourselves in our little community that we've been creating over the last 10 years or so. Jingle bombs, jingle bombs. Yeah. Now, we'll take a break here. You know the numbers, right? Line 1, 304-574-8178. Line 2, otherwise known as the stress line, 304-663-4676. Thank you very kindly, Reinhard, for helping out this evening. You're in the drawing now, and that means that We are at least... okay, let's just pick an arbitrary number of where we are. Let's say we are $290 off the bubble, shall we? Do let's. Thank you, Reinhard, and thank you, Glenn, as well. Thank you very kindly indeed. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
By now in New York City, there's snow on the ground. And out in California, the sunshine's falling down. And maybe down in Memphis, Graceland's all in light. And in Atlanta, Georgia, there's peace on earth tonight. Christmas in Dixie, it's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie to everyone tonight. Kids are out of school. There's magic in Motown. The city's on the move. In Jackson, Mississippi, to Charlotte, Carolina, and all across the nation, it's a peaceful Christmas time. Christmas in Dixie, it's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie.
Thursday, December 10, 2015.
We will not sign off on any agreement that represents a certain extinction of our people.
UN climate talks stall on temperature target.
There is a civil or criminal violation that arises from what they did, then it should be pursued.
Hillary Clinton calls for prosecuting ExxonMobil. Climate denier academics caught soliciting payments from fossil fuel interests. Plus,
I've never heard anything quite so ridiculous.
Rush Limbaugh's guest host given U.S. Senate platform to deny climate change.
Dittos, all of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Some insist time to avoid catastrophe is running out. Others are really stupid.
Not to put too fine a point on it, this is your Green News Report.
Ridiculously earth-shatteringly stupid.
Okay, Desi Doyen, 195 countries,
21 years in the making, just hours left. Will all of these nations be able to come together to come up with one single global treaty to keep the Earth from becoming unlivable?
I'm pretty sure they'll come up with a treaty. The question is, will it be a good one? They are pulling overnighters as we go to air at the United Nations climate talks in Paris. Officials are negotiating that comprehensive agreement for all nations to cut global greenhouse gas emissions. A major conflict. Island nation states and low-lying developing nations are calling for the official target of global temperatures to rise no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. That's a goal much harder to meet than the current target of 2 degrees Celsius. That's because, as UN consultant Dr. Hugh Seeley of the island nation of Grenada said on the broadcast this week, these nations will disappear under rapidly rising seas.
Climate change is an existential threat. This is not something that's an economic issue for us. This is an existential issue for
right.
us. So our backs are literally against the wall on this one, and therefore we will fight for our existence. We will fight for 1.5 to be anchored in the agreement.
The deadline for the talks is Friday. The conference could very well go into overtime. We'll have the thrilling conclusion of the fate of our world in our next episode. Here in the U.S., oil giant ExxonMobil is in damage control over revelations that it misled investors and the public on the science of climate change. And now in a video posted by climate activist group 350.org, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton at a town hall-style campaign event this week said she supports prosecution of Exxon.
I want us to be looking at what ExxonMobil told their shareholders, told the public. And so, yeah, if there is a civil or criminal violation that arises from what they did, then it should be pursued.
Exxon's own scientists, as early as 1977, understood what was going on with the increase of carbon in the atmosphere. They understood that the results, if we kept burning this carbon into the atmosphere, would be, quote, catastrophic. They said it over and over again, and then Exxon spent millions to obscure that science. They need to be held accountable as any other public company would be held accountable for lying to the public and to shareholders. So, no, I'm not unhappy at all that the heat is on ExxonMobil. Hold them accountable, just the way Big Tobacco was held accountable for lying to the public.
Meanwhile, two prominent U.S. professors have been caught soliciting payment from fossil fuel interests in exchange for casting doubt on climate change.
Wait, can we do that?
We could, but I wouldn't want to.
Oh, I could use the money.
Well, anyway, undercover Greenpeace activists posed as fossil fuel industry consultants seeking academic papers claiming that rising CO2 levels are good for the planet. Two American academics offered to write those reports in exchange for payments of as much as $15,000. The investigation exposes how the fossil fuel industry can easily insert bought and paid for climate change denial into the public domain without the public knowing the true source of the funding.
Nice work if you can get it.
Finally, Republican Senator and presidential candidate Ted Cruz is apparently running out of actual climate scientists to deny climate change. So at his Senate Science Committee hearing on Tuesday, Cruz called on right-wing pundit Mark Stein to testify against the national security threat posed by climate change.
We are planning now for global security threats a century hence, because the Maldives might have been swept away by water by then. The entire population of the Maldives are all Sunni Muslim, so they'll fit in perfectly fine if they all move to this Brussels suburb that produced the shooters in Paris.
What the hell is he talking about?
That's a good question.
And that was a hearing on climate science?
In the Senate.
Well, I guess I couldn't get Rush Limbaugh himself. They had to get his guest host, Mark Stein. What a world. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Nice work if you can get it. And if you get it, won't you tell me how?
Yes, indeed, 9 minutes after the hour. And, I've got a challenge on the table. And this would almost get us out of the woods, I think. A very, very, very hearty thanks going out to our friend Darlene up in Connecticut. Darlene says, $100 challenge on the table. Thanks for all you do, Bob. Signed, Darlene. Thank you, Darlene, for all you've done to help keep us going. So there's $100 waiting to find 100 friends. And if we get the 100 friends, then Darlene will kick the 100 over and turn it into 200. And that would get us to, you know, roundaboutish, only $90. It's been a tough week. Let's just put it that way. I at the beginning of the program, thank you, Darlene. Thank you very kindly. And I trust everyone knows, you know, the PayPal interface, headonradionetwork.com/contribute, all of that. Yeah. 10 at 10, 20 at 5, 5 at 20, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25. 8 at 12:50, but yes, there's a matching challenge on the table. A note coming in from Billable Rick. He said, I wanted to let you know that I just shared the Adolf Hatler and Hair Apparent jokes about T-Rump with Norman Goldman in his audience. What do you call Donald Trump when he wears his Make America Great Again baseball cap? Adolf Hatler. And what is he when he takes off his cap? The Hair Apparent. I gave you and the Horn family credit and attribution for those monikers. I look forward to listening to the program later tonight. Oh, I look forward to you being there. And by the way, let me apologize. There was something went sideways with the podcast last night, and I don't know what it is. I went over the script about umpty bajillion times, and for the life of me, I don't know, so Ben was looking at that. Billable Rick also notes, although my beloved Hawkeyes unfortunately fell short last Saturday night to MSU, they at least got the best available consolation prize, a Rose Bowl berth against Stanford, which I may actually attend. You know, I was thinking that when I saw the outcome, Rick, when you're listening later, I thought, I'll bet he's going to figure out a way to celebrate this. By the way, I was at an ugly Christmas sweater party in the final minutes of that game. I fear that some of the guests must have thought I was a Trump supporter when I screamed at the TV after Iowa's safety failed to pull back the MSU halfback on third and goal as he reached the football over the goal line. Oy vey. I'm sorry to hear that you could only listen to that game as it was extremely exciting to watch. They even played the Europe song Final Countdown during the timeout preceding the winning third down play. But at least you were able to listen to the color commentary of Iowa's all-time great halfback, Ed Podolak, who also was an all-pro with the KC Chiefs, indeed. The big upset of the Chiefs over the Vikings in, what, 1970, was it? 69? Can't remember. That was the heyday of Ed Podolak, wasn't it? Yeah. Another suggestion for the Christmas album coming from Kevin out in Colorado Springs. T-Rump the Red-Nosed Fascist had a very shiny nose, and when he spewed his racist rants, you would even say it glows. T-Rump the Red-Nosed Fascist. I think there's potential there, don't you? So, with all the carrying on and whatnot, I wanted to mention, I really do, I find stories out there that I think that are going to be interesting for us to discuss, interesting in terms of conversational value. And it really does. It seems like the show gets taken sideways by idiots with guns or fascists with genocidal intentions. Can we get a? Well, never mind. I'm not going to get dragged down that road. But I wanted, and it fits especially well coming on the after the break, after the Green News Report. It's really, 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 what's been going on in Paris matters. And I don't mean the attack. I mean the climate talks, the attempt, no matter how frustrated we can be with them, the attempt to do something that will preserve the ability of this species to continue to reside on the planet. And as those talks have gotten underway, this past Tuesday, a man as the parlance goes for that particular belief system. A man went on his long journey, or as a friend of mine put it in a Facebook post, he walked on Tuesday. I'm talking about John Trudell from the Santee Dakota people. At one point in time in the 1970s and during a big part of it, he was the chairman of the American Indian Movement. And that was a time of conflict between the federal government and indigenous peoples. He started his involvement with the Wounded Knee conflict in 1973, in which they occupied the town for 71 days, a standoff with federal marshals and FBI agents. This is, of course, where the taking of Leonard Peltier begins. John Trudell was referred to as the most eloquent speaker in the movement. Later on, in the late 70s, early 70s, in fact, John Trudell was part of the sit-in occupation of Alcatraz Island. That went on for 19 months. November 1972, he was among a group of people and a leader of a group of people who occupied the Bureau of Indian Affairs in D.C., demanding treaty rights enforcement. The FBI surveilled him, harassed him, tormented him. So in 1979, he burned an American flag on the steps of the FBI building in Washington, D.C., and he said that the reason he did it was because that flag had been desecrated by government behavior toward American Indians, other minorities, and that you had to burn a desecrated flag. Well, I'm sure it was just a matter of coincidence, but the very next day, his home in Nevada went up in smoke. And in that fire, his wife, who was pregnant at the time, Tina Manning, and their three children, and Ms. Manning's mother, all were killed. Lindsay Manning, a cousin of Tina Manning, killed in that fire, said, "I don't want to say the FBI kills innocent kids and children. I just don't want to say that. But you never know. You never know." Oh, I think we do know. I think we know the FBI has committed a number of atrocities on people that it did not, of whom it did not approve. Among other things, John Trudell was a poet, a musician. He was admired by people like Bob Dylan, Kris Kristofferson. He acted on film. But in noting his passing at the age of 69, I wanted to share with you a piece of audio. Because when I listened to this last night, I was dumbstruck by it. And I don't know if anybody else out there doing progressive radio is gonna play anything like this, or even is gonna give as much time as I've just given. This is 11 minutes long, and I implore you, please, to give your thoughtful consideration to these words. This really does prove that John Trudell was an eloquent speaker in a long line of eloquent speakers among the indigenous population of this hemisphere. when I read about the killing of his wife and children, mother-in-law, I was reminded of something of a piece of oratory that was said to have been admired by none other than Thomas Jefferson. He said it was every bit the equal of anything that had been said by Cicero. It was 1774 on the eve of the American Revolution, and a man named Logan, a leader among the Mingo people, delivered the following. He had tried, Logan had tried to reach some sort of peaceful accord with the white Europeans. And in 1774, he said the following: "I appeal to any white man to say if he ever entered Logan's cabin hungry, and he gave him not meat, if he ever came cold and naked, and he clothed him not. During the course of the last long and bloody war, Logan remained idle in his cabin, an advocate for peace." And that paragraph is brilliant because he draws immediately from those things which the Christian whites were supposed to espouse and hold dear. If he ever entered Logan's cabin hungry and he gave him not meat, if he ever came cold and naked and he clothed him not. That's straight out of the book of Matthew. But he says, in the last long and bloody war, Logan remained idle in his cabin, an advocate for peace. He continues, "Such was my love for the whites that my countrymen pointed as I passed and said, 'Logan is a friend of the white man.' I have even thought to live with you but for the injuries of one man, Colonel Cressop, who last spring in cold blood, unprovoked, murdered the relatives of Logan, not even sparing his wife and children. There runs not a drop of my blood in the veins of any living creature. This has called on me for revenge. I have sought it. I have killed many. I have fully glutted my vengeance for my country. I rejoice in the beams of peace. But do not harbor a thought that mine is the joy of fear. Logan never felt fear. He will not turn on his heel to save his life. Who is there to mourn for Logan? Not one." Not one. And 200 years later, another American Indian leader had his family killed. And yet, even after that, at something in 1980 called the Black Hills Survival Gathering, John Trudell delivered the following 11 minutes. And again, I beg your indulgence because of what this says. 1980, to me, that's day before yesterday. On Tuesday the 8th, we marked the anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon. And for me, it was day before yesterday. And like I said, I can remember everything. But my word, that's 35 years ago. 35 years ago, this man, John Trudell, was begging people to understand the nature of the threat that we human beings posed to our own ability to go on living on this planet. Note in this speech the way he uses the word enemy. Now, all you have to do is open a paper or turn on on the news or God knows Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and you'll hear the word enemy spoken freely. And a lot of these fools and freaks will use the word enemy to describe people simply trying to live out the precious little finite lives that they're given on this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Those are not enemies. Those are enemies only in the minds of fascists like Trump and his angry, mean, ill-willed, dirt-ignorant supporters. John Trudell, 35 years ago, and thank you to my buddy Nick up in the Northwoods for pointing this out to me. John Trudell, he understood who the enemy was. Here he is. This might be the most worthwhile thing you hear today, tonight, or perhaps even for days on end. John Trudell on Liberation, Black Hills Survival Gathering, 1980.
As you all welcome, John Trudell.
I'd like to welcome you all here tonight, and I'd like to talk tonight, and I would like to talk in honor of all of our women warriors, those who are here, and those who have left us for another world, that are with our ancestors. And I would like to talk to honor a man named Leonard Peltier. And I would like to talk in honor of the earth, which is a very sacred place, and it is the only place that we have. I would like people to understand that our Mother Earth is the female manifestation of the creation, and that we must show proper respect to her. We cannot show the proper respect to the women. We cannot show the proper respect to the elders. We cannot show the proper respect to the children. We cannot show the proper respect to ourselves if we ignore our Mother Earth. We are not talking about any political solution. We are not talking about politics at all. We're talking about survival. Our survival will be guaranteed by us, the human people, accepting our responsibilities in honoring the Earth and all of the natural world of which we are a part. There are natural laws that we must honor, and we must obey those natural laws. This is the only way we can show the rightful honor to the earth. We must remember that the earth is the source of all of our life. The earth takes care of us while we are alive in this form, and the earth takes us back when we have departed to the spirit world. We must remember the earth. We must remember our spiritual, real power connection to the earth. We are an extension of the spirit of the Mother Earth. This is our source of power, not the economics, not the politics, not repressive government, not liberal government. Our source of power is us and our spiritual connection to the earth and our recognition of that. We are talking about our survival. The human people are in a real serious situation today, because there are bad people in the world, and these bad people have exploited our lives for many, many years, and they have every intention that they are going to continue to exploit our lives, even in the process of destroying us and themselves. We must accept our responsibilities and stop these bad people from doing these things to us and to our mother, the earth. That is our responsibility. All of the animals that are a natural part of the creation are fulfilling their obligations on the earth, and the only animal that has changed course is the human animal. We no longer fulfill our obligations in protecting the earth. We no longer live in harmony with the earth. And when we have taken these false ways, then we help the bad people to bring down our destruction. They are bad people because they control the economics, and they have created illusions of respectability. Does not mean that they are not insane. They do not know how to live with the earth. There is no sanity in the way that the human people and the earth get treated under these people's manipulation.
There is no sanity to it. There is no humanity to it. There is no rationalization for it. Money as an answer and an excuse is not enough. Money is a false form of power. Money and oppressors, they come and they go. They do not stay. Only the human people are going to be able to stay. We are engaged in a very hard struggle. We are engaged in resistance. We must not limit ourselves as a movement. We are engaged in resistance. Resistance that passes knowledge and learning experience on to the coming generations. Resistance. This is the only way that we will survive. We must resist their attempts to intimidate us. We must resist their attempts to terrorize us. We must resist them. We must not be afraid to live our lives. We must not be afraid to die. We must not be afraid to think. We must not be afraid to stand up to them in their wrongness. We must not be afraid. When they have reached the stage where they can make us to be afraid to live, then we are going to be afraid to die. And then we are violating the natural order of things, because it is only natural that we should live and we should die. We must not allow them to control our minds and create a confusion. A confusion that makes us turn on each other for unimportant matters. We must understand that we are not each other's enemy. We are the collective victim. The enemy sits back and laughs, and it continues to manipulate us as long as we will not understand that. We must understand that as a natural part of the creation, the creation made the bear to be the bear. The creation made the horse to be the horse. The creation made things to be different, and in that difference, we are supposed to produce harmony. So we're going to have to solve some of our racial difference, because the Indian people are here to be Indian people and the white people are here to be white people. The problem is we got to straighten up, not be changing each other into something that we're not. Only by us assuming the responsibility of straightening up will we be able to honor our elder people. Will we be able to honor our women? Will we be able to honor our children? Will we be able to honor ourselves and the very sacred Mother Earth? They are going to try to laugh at us. They are going to try to accuse us of being unrealistic. They are going to throw words like progress at us. But let's look at their progress and their lack of humanity and their lack of civilization. Machines do not make civilization. The human spirit is what creates civilization. The human spirit is what perpetuates civilization, and not the machine. We must rebel against the mechanical age. We must place things in their proper perspective. We must understand that we misuse our energy every time that we allow them to misuse us, because we are energy. We are spirit. We are an extension of the sacred Mother Earth. We must stop this abuse of energy. We must stop them and what they are doing to us. We must do this because it is our obligation to the Earth and to our coming generations. If we have differences of opinion and we have different ways of looking at things, we must understand that we have to find a way to create what is true unity. True unity means that we are going to be able to work together in common struggle and dedicated resistance and accept each other as different beings and find a way to work with that difference, because that's what creates creative flow. That is what is going to give validity to our struggle. We must never be afraid. Fear must not be a part of our life. The only thing that we should worry about is that we have lived our lives without honor. That is what we should worry about. We should not worry about dying. We should worry about trading existence for life, letting these manipulators and these bad people control our lives so that we cannot live it, so that we cannot understand our spiritual connection. We are trading our life for existence. We must understand what that connection has to slavery, because then we are not free. We must understand that slavery is more than the shackles they put around someone's ankles. Slavery is the prisons that they build in our minds through their institutionalized madness. That is slavery. We were not put here on the sacred Mother Earth to work for IBM or for the Air Force or for Standard Oil. We were put here to honor the Earth. That is our obligation. are the indigenous people of the Western Hemisphere. We will not fight you for ownership of the land, but we will stand up to all of these bad people who will come in and abuse and misuse the earth. We will protect our mother. We will stand if everybody turns against us because they say the Indians don't act right. We will stand in protection of our mother. We will stand if it is by ourselves, if it is collectively with other people who are concerned about what is happening to our mother, then we will gladly enjoy, we will gladly embrace these people and take them into the family of man. But we will not change our ways. We would rather not be accepted for what we are than to become something we're not for acceptance. We say that to our allies. We say that to the enemy. We will have a collective learning experience. And we, through this collective learning experience, we will achieve the knowledge that we need for our liberation. We are not involved in any revolution. We're talking about liberation, freedom from a value system, a set of values that is based totally on hypocrisy and dollar value. We seek liberation from the values of exploitation, manipulation, racism, sexism, ageism, classism. We seek liberation. We do not want to get involved in a revolution that we're going to lose. Revolutions are based upon hate of the oppressor. Liberation is based upon love of the people, and we will do whatever is necessary because of our love of the people and our love of the sacred Mother Earth. And I thank you for your time.
See what I mean? That's as powerful as anything that has been spoken into a microphone in the last 35 years. God knows it's probably more powerful than anything that's been spoken into a microphone at a political convention, be it Democrat or Republican, in the last 50 years. Bad people. Simple terms, easy to understand. A cry of supplication, well, no, but a begging that we pay attention to where we live and how we live, and that we put things in proper perspective. Because things are badly out of order. Back during the occupation of Alcatraz, John Trudell said, "If this is the land of the free, we want to know why we don't have the respect and dignity that all free men are accorded by other free men." Yeah. So John Trudell has gone on. That's power. And that's reality. Now, consider that in this light. It was a couple of days ago, and I posted this on my Facebook page. This past Monday, the government of China, which is ostensibly communist, but isn't, they're in the full throes of authoritarian capitalism, there's no doubt about it, and in their desperateness to achieve and acquire wealth, monetary Western wealth, they have come near making parts of that country well nigh unlivable. So this past Monday in Beijing, the government declared a red alert. Not because of some foreign threat on its borders. Not because of some naval exercise in a disputed area of ocean. The government of China declared a red alert on this past Monday because the pollution of the air in the Beijing area had become so profound that it was literally harmful to human existence to breathe outdoors in Beijing. From 7 a.m. this past Tuesday to noon today, which was yesterday, every school was required to be closed in Beijing. Imagine that. Cars were allowed to drive on the streets and roads and avenues and boulevards and highways of Beijing only on alternating days that were determined by license plate number. Fireworks and outdoor barbecues were absolutely banned because the level of pollution of the air in and around Beijing had become so profound that it could not tolerate any additional exacerbation. And even the government itself, the government agencies in Beijing, were required to keep 30% of their automobile fleets off the road. That's how bad it has become. Now, I'm working from the same New York Times article that I posted on my Facebook page a couple of days ago. Edward Wong is the reporter. And as I counted it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Now you heard what I just said. Early, they mentioned automobile emissions. They mentioned that even outdoor barbecues and kebabs, you know, meat on a stick, are wildly popular in Beijing. But even the grilling of the outdoor grilling of kebabs had been curtailed because the air is so foul in Beijing. But here's a little hint. The air in Beijing is not foul because of street vendors grilling kebabs. It's not even made particularly awful, and it is awful, the air in Beijing, because of automobile and diesel, gasoline engine and diesel emissions. It's not the heating systems of the schools are not appreciable contributors to the overall dense, toxic mess that is the air in and around Beijing. The one thing that they did not do was to deal with, at least meaningfully, the actual cause of their problem. And the question for the New York Times in this article, and Mr. Wong, the reporter, is why does it take 13 paragraphs that cite automobile emissions and kebab grillers in the first three or four? Why does it take 13 paragraphs by the New York Times, even as climate talks are proceeding in Paris, where there is, of course, a delegation from the People's Republic of China? Why does it take 13 paragraphs before Mr. Edward Wong writes, "Chinese cities, especially northern ones, have some of the world's worst air pollution. Most of it comes from industrial coal burning, and some from motor vehicles. The leaders in Beijing can ensure clear skies by ordering factories to shut down, but they have done so only during international summit meetings here and signature events like the military parade on September 3rd for the victory over Japan in World War II. At international climate change talks, including the ones now underway in Paris, Chinese officials have promised to curb coal use in order to address both air pollution and carbon dioxide emissions. This week in Paris, China is rightfully getting credit for its policies to tackle climate change, said Alex Wang, a law professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, who studies Chinese environmental policy. But the extraordinary air pollution in Beijing right now demonstrates just how much remains to be done to make these policies work in practice. Along the way, Mr. Wong, the reporter, notes that a red alert goes into effect in China if there's a prediction that air quality indices will stay above 200 for more than 72 hours. 200 what? Well, that's 200 parts per million of a particulate matter called PM2.5. And we've talked about the particulate matter standards on this program. God knows you're not going to hear it on a lot of others. There's PM10 and PM2.5. But here's the fun part. PM2.5 isn't nearly as deadly as the unenunciated standard of things called ultrafine particulate matter. And if you've got a PM2.5 problem, it is rock solid lead pipe cinch certain that you have a monumental ultrafine problem. And that is what kills people. And that has a lot to do with the burning of coal. Not the mercury, not the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, although those are bad too, but simply the particulate matter, because as my good friend and one of the leading experts on particulate poisons, Dr. Michael McCauley, has explained to me, at the ultrafine level, say from 100 microns down to 10, there is no substance known to science, and that is, there is no substance known to humanity that at an ultrafine level is not absolutely toxic to human existence. Okay? And we don't even have a standard for that. The EPA doesn't dare, you know, the job-killing EPA doesn't even dare promulgate a standard for ultrafines, because if it did, a whole bunch of toxic processes in this country would have to end. And I dare say not a single coal-fired power plant could operate. Even assume, and this was the exact example used by Dr. McCauley in explaining to me, they use something called titanium white. And at PM10 and PM2.5, titanium white is absolutely benign. It's as white as snow, and you can snort it off a mirror, and it's not going to hurt you. But the minute it's benign. But the minute you get it down to an ultrafine level, even titanium white begins to work absolutely, amazingly awful havoc on human systems. Ultrafines can transit between cell walls. Dr. McCauley has explained to me how you can see an ultrafine in one cell, and 10 cells away, you'll see wreckage start taking place in the nucleus of the cell. PM2.5 won't necessarily transit the blood-brain barrier or the heart-lung barrier or the placental barrier. Ultrafines pass through as if they were no barrier at all. And so when John Trudell talks about bad people and what the bad people are doing, we need to understand who those bad people are. If there are people bringing processes to your locality, to your community, in which they promise, yeah, but we're going to have some jobs. And along the way, they say, well, you know, I mean, we'll certainly comply with all applicable environmental standards. What happens if there are no standards? That's the moment that you find out that you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And of all that vile, filthy, toxic coal smoke that blankets Beijing, I mean, hell, it's a wonder if any of the street kebabs you buy don't just taste like coal right there, how it is. Hell, some of them are probably being cooked over coal braziers. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, asking me, Bob, why ain't you a friend of Chinese coal? Well, see, Carol, it's not Chinese coal. That's the next part of the puzzle here. The toxic, life-ending filth that is blanketing a place like Beijing wasn't necessarily mined in China. Some of it, maybe a whole bunch of it, was mined in not particularly populated areas of Australia, and put aboard tankers and shipped out across the Great Barrier Reef. And hey, the Great Barrier Reef is dying. Wonder why? But some of it, and no small amount of it, rather a good bit of it, of that poisonous death that lingers over Beijing, that children have to breathe. Oh, the precious fetuses. That looming, lingering death comes from right here, y'all. Ain't you a friend of coal? Coal is West Virginia. About all I know is mining coal. Because while maybe we're not burning so much of it as we used to in our coal-fired power plants, because a lot of those have switched over to almost equally toxic natural gas, they're still loading tons and tons and tons and tons and tons on ships. And those ships sail away out of sight over the horizon. And they go down the eastern seaboard of North America. And they turn right at Florida between, say, well, maybe they go past, but maybe they don't even turn right between like, say, Key West and Cuba. Maybe that's a little too dodgy. Maybe they keep going south, and then they just hang a right once they're well past Cuba and make for the Panama Canal, where they transit the Panama Canal. And cross the Pacific and offload in China, where it's burned about as filthily as coal can be burned, by the way, because the Chinese are in they're in a trap of their own making. They want the economy to expand. They want people to be wealthier. They want to be capitalists. And yet they're finding out that the capitalists of the West have simply made it so that the only way they can do all that is by poisoning their own people. Ain't capitalism just
wonderful?
Yeah. Note coming in from Ron in the tepid north. I was in Beijing 25 years ago. In late October, there was a cold snap, and everyone was burning coal. The smog was so bad that I was changing white shirts three times a day, blowing black crap out of my nose, and I couldn't see the parking lot from my room on the 20th floor. You know, that floor with the matron sitting outside of the elevators with a big book logging my comings and goings. It was also the week when they delivered the cabbages from the countryside and deposited them in the little parks on every block. Stinking cabbage and coal smoke is a terrible combination. Not all travel is glamorous. No. Michael McCauley told me about one of his trips studying this sort of thing to China, and he said the largest animal I saw was a bird, because much of the wildlife was simply eaten almost to extinction during the Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward. So while the liars of the Friends of Coal and the West Virginia Coal Association and the Kentucky Coal Association and the United States Bituminous Association, if you get right down to it, and Peabody and whatnot, while they talk about Obama's war on coal and how he's killed the coal industry, they're still loading ships and they're still loading train cars. Because China will accept all the coal that we can send them. And so will India. And they like Appalachian coal in Russia, too. And every single lump of it that comes from here comes with a little flecking of human tissue somehow upon it. And really, that's very nearly the perfect picture of the problem with coal. It is toxic in its extraction. It is toxic in its transport. And it is toxic in its combustion. And by the way, hey, West Coast members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, West Coast Hornedanistas, guess what? Those dense yellow clouds of carboniferous filth that linger briefly over places like Beijing, well, it's not like the wind just stops, and it's not like eventually it all falls to earth. It comes to you in great, virulent clouds that are visible from space. And so is completed the cycle of death. That which began hundreds of millions of years ago in shallow water swamps under a shallow sea here where we are now, that began in the death of things in an anaerobic environment so that it could be pressed down over the eons as plant matter fell on plant matter fell on plant matter, and it pressed and it sank and it compressed until eventually, through the processes of heat and pressure and time, it became a combustible rock that began in death. We dig it up. We literally dig up the old dead parts of the planet, set fire to it so it can kill the planet all over again. And it took the New York Times 13 paragraphs to note that the problem in China, the problem with China's air, is coal. Wonder what Peabody had to pay to get that paragraph buried all the way down to paragraph 13 in light of the fact that most people don't get past paragraph 4. Muriel, I tell you what, if they just stop all that outdoor barbecuing, maybe they could breathe in Beijing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, as Robert in Australia reminds us, Soylent Green, the movie, which really, once you get past the kitschy production design, is quite compelling, in which humanity is vastly overpopulated and underfed and on the verge of wholesale collapse. Soylent Green was set in 2020. It's interesting the vision Hollywood has had. Soylent Green is set in 2020, and if I'm not mistaken, I think, is it next year? Yeah, next year will mark the incept date for Roy Batty in Blade Runner, which is set, isn't it, in 2019, and that's a Southern California sprawl in which the sun is never seen. It's not just that the movie takes place all at night. You just can't see anything because the sun is obliterated from the sky. Wonder how that happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, let's take a break. Oh, wait. What? What's that you say?
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Yes, human beings, my friend.
Silent Green is people!
That's what I thought. Titanic. No. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
No cigarette.
Yeah, you may, it may be all you need is the air that you breathe, but thanks to capitalism, well, you may not need to breathe that air. It's a cost-benefit analysis, really. Absolutely. This is the Horn for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Again, a reminder, I'll be filling in for Malloy tomorrow evening. Mike and Kathy and Miss Molly taking some a long holiday weekend, I hope, in which they will enjoy themselves thoroughly. And so from 9 to midnight, that's what we'll be doing here. And so no regular program tomorrow evening. What else? What else? A quick reminder. Thank you to David, and thank you to Gerald. We are now down to $270.63. Thanks for the ciphering, Gerald. I appreciate you keeping me. It's like doing, you know, some people do crossword puzzles and Sudoku and stuff like that to stay sharp. I get to cipher on air. Because, well, awesome. Mm-hmm. Courtesy of Roger up in Oregon, another submission for the Horn, the Horn Citadel Freshman Knob Klansman Chorus. Adolf the White-Robed Reindeer had a very hate-stained clothes, and if you ever saw him, you would even say it shows. See? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Irish Dave reminding me, try to never forget, Bob. Guns don't kill people. Soylent Green has killed people. Also, too, Charlton Heston said more than once, you can have my coal when you pry it from my cold, dead hands. Right, right. Also, too, when coal is outlawed, only outlaws will have coal. Because there's a war on coal, you see. Well, thank you. Thank you. Brother Deacon Asa says, they dig up the dead parts of the planet and set fire to it just to start the cycle of death all over again. He says, that was poetry. I appreciate the nomination. I do. Robert in Australia writing, here in Oz, both state and federal governments continue to support more coal mining and export. Well, Gina Reinhardt is only worth $15 billion. And if the Great Barrier Reef dies, who cares? You can't see it anyway. It's underwater. Why do we continue to export coal? Because Australians seem unable to make that step from being a resource colony to being a country that makes things and does things. We continue to see ourselves as second best. Dig it up and sell it. Actually, it's get someone else to dig it up and sell it and give us a tiny percentage. Jobs, 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 the Pollies yell. It's all they know and it's worked before. I continue to wait for the dinosaurs to go extinct. Yeah, they're still wandering around Canberra, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I once sat on an aircraft on a flight, I forget to or from where, next to an Australian executive who was on his way to help some folks better do a better job of blasting the bejesus out of some mountains in southern Appalachia. I forget Mingo or Logan or Boone or whatever counties. And I was really proud of myself. I didn't get myself thrown off the flight. Nope, I didn't. Tim from L.A. with a note. Subject line, China's smog. Looking at the smog in Beijing reminded me of days when Los Angeles had a major smog problem, though not as horrible as Beijing. I used to have asthma attacks every summer. I couldn't breathe and my lungs whistled while I inhaled. All I did was sit down and not run around. There was no way I could see downtown Los Angeles, which is 5 miles west of my parents' home, let alone the Pacific Ocean 20 miles further. I used to use inhalers and took prescriptions to stop my wheezing. Luckily, Los Angeles, with the support of California, regulated the corporations and automobiles, and now I can see the ocean. Our green freeway signs with the white lettering are no longer as black as they used to be more than 40 years ago, and now asthma is actually rare in Los Angeles. Even the San Fernando Valley, the area in which smog gets trapped, isn't that horrible anymore. So when I look to China, it brings back bad memories, but I guess when a lot of China's population are gone or are suffering from cancer, they already are, maybe the government will come in and do their communist thing and regulate the commons. I would not run off to Harrah's in Reno with a $5 bill to put on that if I were you, Tim. They are capitalists, okay? They can put up, you know, in the Forbidden City, there's still a great big picture of Chairman Mao right in the middle. Chairman Mao would not recognize China today. And that's not to say he was a great guy or anything, but he would not recognize the China that exists, because it is a full-on capitalist wonderland. I mean, I think about things. I had to put, because I'd driven them as far as they could go. I'd driven them down to the steel belts. I had to put new tires on the car the other day. And I don't know, is this the measure of the cost of environmental regulations? I somehow don't think so. But the American-made, and there aren't damned well very many of them, but the American-made tires were $200 a piece. On the other hand, I could get some Chinese knockoff off-brand tires that were probably made by some slave laborer in a factory belching smoke and toxins somewhere in that country. I could get those for 80 a skin. Well, $800 was not a possibility. So I went against my better judgment, and I went with the slave labor tires. And I did so knowing what I was doing. But that's how it is. Tim concludes and says, who knows, maybe China won't... act, we're missing a word here, Tim, so that the population would drop, I don't know. But looking at the people suffering is as sickening as the skies and streets of Beijing. Well, it took a long time for capitalism to get a real good rock-solid foothold in China. But they're there. They made it. And golly! I'll bet that newly minted middle class there, as they're able to get their brand new shiny Androids and iPhones and digital gizmos just like us, they spend about as much time thinking about the miserable human beings who make them as we do, which is to say, hardly at all. When I posted that coal story on my Facebook page, I got a response from our buddy Alan, who is in fact over in Paris, observing as an advocate for peace and real solutions to climate change, and he is as committed as anyone I know to both. Alan posted something that he had seen in the course of his time in Paris. And there are, in fact, Chinese activists in Paris trying to raise awareness of what's going on in that country. Alan sent along a photo written in both Chinese script and English. Air pollution, save Beijing. On December 8th, 2015, today, the very first red alarm of haze by the Beijing municipal government. So they knew. They were well aware. And I'm glad, as I have said, I'm glad that Alan is over there. Because we need some real people there. And I don't know if... having a bunch of, for lack of a better term, Brahmins, who have virtually no contact with the real world whatsoever, determining the fate of billions, I don't know if that's a real solution. I have a sneaking suspicion, as others have told us recently, that we are going to be in charge of our own salvation. It's the inspiration that our good friend Jeff Biggers drew from seeing the fact that wind turbines and solar panels are going up on barns in Iowa that are owned by people who are otherwise rock-ribbed, staunch economic conservatives. But those fiscal conservatives have figured out that it's a lot better to make your own electricity than to buy it from somebody who is gouging you for it and poisoning you and your loved ones in the process of so doing. Because in all these instances, all these toxins, who pays the lion's share of the price? Poor people do, of course. Poor people around this planet pay and pay and pay and pay until they have nothing left with which to pay but their very existence and the moneyed interests and the capitalists are more than happy to cash that coin as well. And check the bottom line and say, look, we're a bit more wealthy today, aren't we? Oh, thank you for the thank you, Robert, for the update. I have a pronunciation update now. It may look like three syllables, but it ain't. The capital of Australia is Canberra. We pronounce Canberra as Canberra. And if you, and Robert adds, if you've ever wondered why Canberra is halfway between Sydney and Melbourne, which is Mebane, as close as I can get, it's because we couldn't decide which would be the capital after Federation. P.S. I no longer look at the made-in label here in Australia. It's all made in China. Even our koala bear and kangaroo toys and Aussie flags. Well, that's okay. Our yellow support the troops ribbon magnets that we put on the back of our Cadillac Escalades, Robert, are made in China, too, and so are our American flag magnets. Flagnets! There's a word! Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to jump into the conversation, you are welcome. This isn't just one long 3-hour filibobster. Although it can be. And a reminder, we do have a $100 matching challenge on the table, of which we have, I did the ciphering already, of which we have $29.23. So that means that we have $70.77 to go. Is that right? No. $70.33. No. No, $70.23 to go. In which case, Darlene will happily double all of those contributions. And every contribution, remember, goes into a drawing Monday evening after Moran Monday for a hand-painted portrait on a turkey feather, mounted, matted, and framed. Beautiful. And if you want to see him, go and look at the post. It's pinned to the top over at the Horn Facebook group. Okie doke. Hey, look, up there, walking around in Bermuda shorts and maybe a Hawaiian shirt. It's Ron of the Unfrozen North.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm reasonable.
Well, you always are. You're Canadian, right?
It's funny you mentioned shorts. I actually had on a pair of shorts for about an hour and a half this afternoon in my backyard doing some absolute last-minute winter cleanup stuff and Christmas lights, and I was wearing shorts, and I could see my toenails.
Is that a comment on the length of your toenails?
This time of year, being able to see one's toenails outside is either evidence of stupidity or, stupidity. But I just had to do it. I mean, the opportunity was there. Why not go for it?
The greatness was in the moment and in you.
Yeah. So how the hell are you doing?
You know, I guess I'm okay. I'm not going to complain about 65 degree days on the 10th day of December. I'm not going to complain about that. It just feels a little strange.
Little niggling bell of alarm in the back of your subconscious.
Well, like, you know, I mean, okay. So growing up in Alabama, this was not that extraordinary. Although even in North Alabama, you know, you should be down in, you know, the 50s. This ain't right. Or maybe, as you noted, this is just the good side of El Nino.
Well, on the plus side, see, being an engineer, I have to look at the optimistic side and figure the glass is the right size. This means your neighbor is not burning coal smoke.
Then don't I know it? I have not been breathing that crap. The studio is not Little Beijing, and I have taken that into account. I truly have.
I think I mentioned in the note to you that when I was in Beijing on that trip, I did see cats, but damn, they were fast.
And it's no joke. I mean, the wildlife got eaten down to nothing. Because that's all people had.
Yep. Kind of primal, but it was educational. I came back to Canada with a smile on my face.
Yeah, like you said, not all travel is glamorous.
Yeah. So what's going to happen with Blankenship?
You know, federal sentencing guidelines are in play now, I think, because, a couple of decades ago, we decided that people that we clothed with authority to judge other people and gave them lifetime jobs on good behavior because they're judges and learned people of the law and we trusted them to make it. So we took all that away and we put them on a schedule, and there's upward departures and downward departures and sideways departures. I'm sorry. I'm a cynic. I'm not kidding. I still will be amazed if he does a day behind bars. And I also acknowledge, Ron, that if he does a day behind bars, he will do it raking leaves at Maxwell Air Force Base or Ashland, Kentucky, or somewhere like that.
We had something up here called the Federal Sentencing Guidelines that the conservative government, who was just booted up and put in place with mandatory sentences,
yes,
for a whole raft of crimes.
Mandatory minimums, those evil things.
Plus mandatory fines, even if the people couldn't afford to pay them. And if they didn't pay the fine, it added to their sentence. And that all played well with the right wing. But the right wing apparently was a lot smaller than the government of the day thought they were. And those are being pushed out now. Judges are being given much more discretion. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works. But I think what you were describing was, sentencing guidelines. And this would be Blankenship's first offense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, because his maid didn't file a complaint on him when he threw his McDonald's breakfast at her for getting him sausage instead of bacon or whatever. Because he did that.
Yeah. Wonderful piece of work he is.
And you know, given the situation, he'll probably live to be 100. He's only 65, you know.
Well, I don't think he ever actually, is there any evidence he ever actually went down into a working mine?
Oh, I think he has been here and there, but he certainly didn't go into Upper Big Branch. He was instead sitting in the fastness of his mountaintop mansion, literally demanding reports every 30 minutes from every mine on production numbers.
Mm.
And to prove that he is a classic paranoid, he went full Nixon, Ron. I don't know if you realize this. He recorded everything that he said to anyone and that anyone said to him. Now, why does a man do that?
Bipolar. Because he knows the paranoid moments are going to come and he wants the proof, by God.
Yeah, and so that formed the bulk of the evidence. And he still, I'm not over it, okay? We learned in the Blankenship trial that it is a misdemeanor to flaunt safety regulations designed to save human beings' lives, but it's a felony if you lie to Wall Street. But it's awful hard, we also found out, it is awful hard to prove that anybody ever lies to Wall Street.
Freedom.
I tell it's you, Merca.
You wonder if Robert Frost and Abraham Lincoln would even recognize a country now.
Oh, I don't think so. And certainly Jefferson and Adams and Franklin. Franklin had a bit of a cynical streak, if we are to believe that apocryphal story about the person asking him, Mr. Franklin, what kind of government do we have? And he says, a republic, if you can keep it.
Yeah.
He might recognize it. Franklin might say, yeah, this is the absolute sum total of avarice gone wild. But Franklin managed to die while the revolutionary dream was still at least on life support. I maintain the theory that when the Constitutional Convention was called, most of the revolutionaries of 1776, at least the thinkers and Enlightenment types, looked up and went, nah, that's over. Okay, ain't going to happen. Because you had so much, you had democracy breaking out all over the place, and the money was going, we can't have this. Oh, hell no. Mm-mm. No. So, I mean, look, Jefferson was out there writing letters when he went after the Louisiana Purchase. He wrote that he had just expanded the territory of the United States to support population growth, his words, unto the thousandth generation.
Ooh.
Yeah, he got that one wrong, Tom. Of course, then again, he didn't know how much of what he had just bought was desert. So there's that. And he didn't. I don't. Did he understand it would require a certain amount of genocide? We don't know that either.
And I've often wondered if Carl Sandburg were writing a poem about big shoulders now, what would he use as his exemplar?
Oh, what would be the city of the big shoulders?
Yeah.
Oh, Silicon Valley. I mean, we're all standing on Silicon Valley, aren't we? Everything, God almighty, you can go in the store and buy a smart coffee pot that will harangue you to put more water in the reservoir, or tell you that, you know, you need to buy more Java based upon estimates of how many pots you've made lately, and it'll send you a damn text message on your smartphone. There are smart toasters out there, I think, and you can adjust the degree. Randy and PA and I were having an email exchange about this not too long back. He said, I don't need a smart toaster. I said, I don't either. I don't need another thing drawing damn bandwidth. Another thing that can be surveilled. Because, see, that's one of those things Ron, that I acknowledge coming out. Well, it's like that headline that came from the New York Times. Americans are more frightened now than they've been than they were immediately after 9/11. And when the American people decide to start marathon pants wetting, then that's the time when the authoritarians move in and take a few more bites out of our rights. And you can bet your ass it's going to happen. I don't know, what do we call it? The Protecting Pants Wetting Americans from Their Own Boogeyman Act.
Well, can I go on a mini 15-second rant here?
Rant away, my friend.
If the FCC, in their ephemeral wisdom, had decided to do the same thing that the UK and Canada did, and label Fox News as an opinion channel and put them in the upper brackets where there's a subservice, the U.S. would be in a far, far better position. I throw much of the angst that's going on in the U.S. right now and all the crap that's flowing from it right at the feet of the FCC. If Fox didn't have a wide open, wide open is the best word I can come up with, to throw all their hate and rants and right-wing bullshit at the American populace, the U.S. would be in a totally different position now, politically, from a societal standpoint, possibly even economic, but it's all got to be laid right at the feet of the FCC. And unless I'm mistaken, that happened during the Clinton administration.
I was going to go there the minute you took a breath. You know how we talk about the way that Clinton kneecapped the poor with welfare reform and the way he screwed people right out of their money with the repeal of Glass-Steagall and the way he was critically important in the invention of the prison industrial complex? Well, we do all that, and often we don't. Nobody out there, and maybe it's because of, and this is not a critique of Bernie, but a suggestion to broaden scope. Bernie, people like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren have jumped on the repeal of Glass-Steagall, rightly so, as the proximate cause for what happened to bring about the housing bubble and the credit default swaps and all of that evil, confusing, miserable three-card Monte, filthy shell game that led to the meltdown of 2008. Okay.
Yep.
What I would like to see, and you know, here I'm just a little lone voice crying in the wilderness. But what I would like to see is for progressive people to start talking about repealing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Because if we ever want to get back to some degree of equity in the ownership of the public airwaves, that has to be job one, day one, Ron. Because the Telecommunications Act of 1996 is what makes Fox happen.
Yep. Somewhere I have a paper I wrote. I was an intellectual prostitute, I guess you would call it, for the telecom industry in Canada and spent a lot of time on behalf of Canadian telecom carriers down in Washington. And somewhere I wrote a paper that said the 1996 Telecom Act opened the doors for the entire media environment, internet environment, regulatory environment in telecom that everybody knew and understood for the past 30 or 40 years to be turned on its head. It would take about a decade. And I sent my document up, and it entered the intellectual corporate waters without leaving a ripple, and I never heard a single response from it.
Not exactly, but run silent, run deep, was it?
Oh, no. But I spent a lot of time talking to staffers up on the Hill on both sides of the aisle, and in both bodies. And the general consensus was, we're not really sure why all of this is happening. And I kept going, money. And it didn't really work. But
they actually still say something like that in D.C.? I mean,
they did then. That was 94, 95 leading.
Then they were lying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was a hill, Bob.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No pushback from me. Yeah. But at least elements of the Telecom Act of 1996 have got to go. They have just got to go.
I mean, Fox, there's no way in God's green earth Fox should have a place on basic cable in the U.S. It's an opinion network. Canada's labeled it that way. The U.K.'s labeled it that way. And it's an friggin' opinion network. It is not news. It's not unbiased.
Well, didn't Fox go in and argue in Canada that they were not a news operation, but were, in fact, an entertainment channel?
They did. Which still, if they'd done their research, would have gotten them labeled as a subscription or premium service. Yeah. They ended up affiliating with an outfit called Sun News in Canada, which is right-wing. They got put on the pay service and lasted damn near 18 months until all 2,500 of their subscribers dropped off and they went bankrupt. And I'm sitting there going, damn, if only.
Yeah. And I got a tweet in from Isaac, and he's right. He says the FCC's regulatory powers extend only to over-the-air broadcasters who transmit their programs via publicly owned spectrum. And that
Which is picked up by cable TV.
Right. That's nominally true, but at some point in time, cable outlets have to use the spectrum to transmit. I mean, there's not one long cord from Fox News headquarters in New York out to where Emery and Marvelline sit there a-watching of it in their matching Barca loungers in Busted Knuckle, West Virginia.
And Cletus and his wife, Cordis, and all those people, they watch basic cable, which means they're watching O'Reilly and Hannity and the Fabulous Five at Five.
But see, and the other aspect of this is the other thing that the Telecommunications Act did is it served to modify who could own what in terms of in terms of media outlets. I mean, and you being a West Virginian, you might be interested to know this. Gerald, when he wasn't figuring out how to make me cipher more, sent me an article from the Gazette, the wvgazettemail.com. Phil Kabler is the muckraker, the state house muckraker in West Virginia. And so bear with me. It's a little bit complicated. I'm really proud of our side, and in this case, it's the West Virginia AFL-CIO, who began running ads, and I've heard them, and they are very, very plainly against the idea of right to work. They're trying to salt the earth before these godforsaken bunches of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, and booger eaters, and people like Tom Fast, who says that the president is a Kenyan Muslim usurper who does secret Muslim hand jive. I mean, no, really. I mean, you can ask almost anybody, hey, what do you think of Tom Fast on the streets of Fayetteville? And they'll go, oh, what an asshole. Well, how did he get in office? Well, I didn't vote for him. You didn't vote, did you? But that's an aside. So the AFL-CIO has been paying, and they've been spending the money. God bless them. I wish they'd spend a little bit with me. You know what? But then again, that would be preaching to the choir. I mean, you know, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? That's the way they think. Not that it would be valuable to actually have someone talking, you know, things that are important, progressive values, that kind of thing. But anyway. So they've been buying ads all over the state against the idea of turning West Virginia into a right-to-work state. Well, meanwhile, the bunch who pretty much have monopolized broadcast in West Virginia, which is, among other things, the AJG Corp and West Virginia Radio Corporation. Well, they're trying to buy a couple of the last two remaining radio stations in the Morgantown area. Namely, one of my old alma maters, WCLG, where I used to do news and midnight rock and roll DJing.
Was that easier?
Which?
Just on at midnight playing whatever music.
Yeah, you know,
you
go on at midnight I still had a format and a playlist. But I had a little more room to have a little more fun. So from midnight to six, and then I turned into the newsman.
Yeah. You have that voice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So they want to buy WCLG, and lo and behold, a group called the Phillips Group, which handles ad placement, media relations, that kind of thing. They handled the AFL-CIO ad buy. And it concludes, you know, tell your legislator right to work is wrong for West Virginia, you know, which it is. And so about a week after airing these things all over the state, the general manager of WVRC, West Virginia Radio Corporation, a guy named Joe Parsons, called Laura Phillips and said they were pulling the ads from WVRC stations because they were inflammatory. They're too controversial. In other words, and they're the radio equivalent of Fox in this state, okay? I mean, you probably already know, Ron. But it is too controversial and inflammatory to run ads saying that legislators shouldn't vote to take away good wages from working people in this state. Now, they can only own stations like that in large part, and it's not just to own radio stations, it's to own radio, TV, and newspapers.
Yeah.
You can only do that by dint of the workings of the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Yeah.
So that the wealthy right wing can move in and dominate media in every market in the country. That's how Clear Channel, for instance, grew like the toxic night blooming flower that it is. That's why a train can derail in North Dakota. And the emergency response people try to call the station to tell people to go shelter in place, and they can't reach anybody because it's nothing but a little room with a transmitter and a computer in it running automation software out of Charlotte, North Carolina. That's how that works.
It's enough to make you a bit disgruntled, isn't it?
Hey, cranky. Cranky.
Cranky, yeah.
And as Robert up in Morgantown notes, yeah, those ads inflame John Racy. And remember, John Racy is the guy who said that Morgantown's public health department passing a law saying there would be no indoor smoking in Monongalia County businesses was the exact same thing as being put in John Racy, being put in a cattle car and sent off to a death camp. The exact same thing, Ron.
I'm surprised he didn't throw in the WVU football coach in that same cattle car.
Goodbye, Dana. Goodbye. How can we miss you if you won't leave? Goodbye. Oh, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah.
I've already got my humiliation suit picked out. I've got my Mountaineer fleece blanket, and I'll have it over my head, and I'll periodically peer out through a slit between two of my forefingers, just to watch as Arizona State beats the living hell out of us.
And the logo for that game is going to be a sheep with really irritated eyes and a rifle in one hand and a K-bar in the other, going, okay, come on, sucker. Come on. You're mine. I agree with you, Bob. I think they'll get your butt handed to them.
And then we'll renegotiate a 4-year contract extension for Dana because, you know,
$2.5 million a year.
Right, because we wouldn't want some other college to come and steal him out from under us. I mean, he's going to be the next Bobby Bowden, you know.
Who was the previous coach?
There was
the guy who would choke if he saw
Yeah, Rich Rod, Stewart.
Now there was a guy. He got all the way to the national championship once, lost it.
Oh, Nealon?
The joke was that his wife wouldn't even allow him to eat soup or cereal because every time he saw a bowl, he choked.
Exactly, and of course the fact that Billy Graham and Don Nealon were the only two men in West Virginia who could get 70,000 hillbillies to stand on their feet and yell, Jesus Christ.
Well, I've never heard that one. Oh, thank you. No, that was worth the call in right there.
I live to serve.
Yeah. Speaking of the Telecom Act, though, I would like to think there's some recognition if we ever got a reasonable government and Congress back in place who look back at everything they've just come through and went, whoa, we don't want to go through that crap again. Come up with some kind of a reasonable format in terms of public discourse between you got Congress on the one hand and you've got media on the other, which if you're going to have inflammatory inputs, regardless of your point of view, they should come from both sides instead of just one. There's got to be some.
Well, and that's the fairness
doctrine.
Yeah, that's the fairness doctrine that was taken out behind the barn and beaten to death under Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, if the station manager did an edit, this is an editorial comment from WFUKU. We believe that stop signs at the corner of Oak and Main Street are a wild-eyed violation of our sacred principles of liberty and freedom, and everybody just needs to be having at it at that four-way stop. So then, after doing that, if somebody wrote in and said, listen, I want to offer a differing opinion. I like stop signs. I want my children to live to see, you know, two. Then the fairness doctrine said it was required, since they were operating under a license to make money over the public airwaves, to offer an opposing viewpoint. And no sooner had Ronnie Reagan gotten into office than that had to go. And it's that then fuels the rise of talk radio, fuels the rise of Flush Flembaugh and his Jones and the various women he has from time to time kept in a pit. And
leads O'Reilly into making $50 million a year.
Well, right. I mean, you can't have Rush Limbaugh inside a fairness doctrine, because that would mean that the stations would periodically have to offer, say, if you're offering three hours of wild-eyed pillhead right wingery, you'd have to offer 3 hours of sanity. And I didn't say Hannity; I said sanity.
I'm just thinking that the fairness doctrine, if it was invoked, would get you back on the public airwaves.
Maybe, but then again, a lot of that is a lot of that's also controlled by one lone guy building, fighting his way into, or lone woman fighting her way into the intensely competitive market of terrestrial radio. That's a hard sell. You've got to have somebody behind you. You've got to have a media group behind you.
Well, hell, you and I have had beer together and food. What's not to like?
Shall we be a media group?
I would be a foreign-owned corporation, you know, Bob. That would
Well, that means you can only, that would mean you could only own 48% of the media group. You know, just like Prince.
Okay, Bob, you get to 52, I'm in.
Right, right, because that would be just like Prince Ibn bin Walil, his serene, noble, majestic graciousness, third cousin on the distaff side from the King of Saudi Arabia, who owns 48% of Fox.
Yep. What's Murdoch own?
52.
52. So we have an Australian right-winger and Middle Eastern Wahhabism entrepreneur owning the channel that influences most of the rabid right-wing opinion in the U.S. What's wrong with that picture?
By Jove, I think he's got it. Mm-hmm. Again, and all of that, the easing of the foreign media ownership, all of that comes along via the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Yep.
So I come back to my thesis, Ron. Shouldn't some progressive politician start talking about that a little bit? I mean, hell, you'd get.
There's only one. Somebody's got to get the message to Bernie or Warren, but nobody listens to Warren right now because she's not particularly relevant to the media.
Well, yeah, and like I said the other night, she endorsed Hillary's plan to not break up the big banks, but to regulate them better. That was deeply disappointing when I read that. Now, she didn't endorse Hillary as, you know, candidate Clinton. She endorsed her idea.
Yeah. So, it's all symbolism.
Well, it is. It's no theater, you know, NOH.
Yeah.
It's or maybe it's a 17th century a drawing room drama comedy of errors or comedy of manners.
I was going to suggest that it was Chinese theater, the old country Chinese theater where everybody paid the equivalent of a penny, and they got to sit in the front row as close as they could get. And it was very much like very theatrical, lots of masks and all the rest of it. But it was the only way that you could criticize the emperor.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like the government was smart
enough to let it happen because they realized there had to be some kind of an outlet.
Yeah, and or when the English banned the Irish from singing actual words, and that gave rise to the singing of tunes with nonsense words, hoodlio diddlio daddlio day, right?
Yeah.
Ron, it's always a delightful conversation with you, my friend.
Well, it's always different, and we never know where it's going to go.
We're not supposed to.
No.
Mysterious are the ways of the goddess of conversation.
And I would, with respect to rules on the Irish, my only objection is that the rule banning the bagpipes was apparently rescinded.
You know what? You know my bagpipe joke, right?
No.
The guy that walks into the bar with an octopus, and he tells the bartender, "Hey, I'll bet you a beer that my octopus can play that piano over there." Bartender says, "You're on." And so he goes over, the octopus does, and plays a little bit of a Moonlight Sonata. And sure enough, the bartender says, "Well, that's amazing. Let me give you a beer." He says, "Double or nothing. I'll bet you my octopus can play that clarinet over there." Well, okay. Piano kind of made sense. 8 tentacles, all of that. He said, no, have the octopus go play the clarinet. And just absolutely would have made Pete Fountain weep.
Mm.
So the guy wins again. And he says, "Okay, all right, all the marbles. I drink free all night. My octopus can play any instrument in this bar." The bartender says, "Okay, I'll choose. Have your octopus go play those bagpipes." He sets the octopus down over by the bagpipes. The octopus looks and looks and kind of wanders around, looks around,
touches it with its tentacles. And the guy goes, well, go on, play it. And the octopus turns to him and says, play it. If I can get its pajamas off, I'm going to fuck it.
Yep.
Sorry, I love that one too.
You have yourself a great evening, Bob. It was a perfect note to end it.
I thank you very kindly. You have a wonderful evening too, Ron. Take care.
Y'all take care, sir.
Bye now. The ever far-ranging, far-reaching mind of our buddy Ron up in Canada. Okay, quick trip over to the stress line. Hey, what's happening?
Hi, Will from Chicago here, Bob.
Oh, my God, Will. It's so good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. I've been busy doing things, and I have a very long day tomorrow, but just a couple quick points because I know we're up against the clock. One, I did post a good link in the chat room on from the American Prospect. Essentially, terrorists want you to be very afraid, so don't be. And son of a gun, doesn't the author of it, who happens to be an Israeli peace activist, mention, well, besides being afraid, if you also limit access to weaponry, wow, you actually have less violence. But that would be logical, and the current GOP is so far from logic as to be another part of the universe entirely.
Oh, the light from logic won't reach the GOP for a million years.
Not at all. And also a brief call out. Remember, if you can help keep the horn going, please do so. Any little bit helps. Even a dollar will help. And remember, if you are thinking of becoming one of the 400 subscribers, Bob could use the help, because I don't think he, Mike Malloy, Nicole Sandler, and many other good progressive hosts are expecting a miracle from Soros clause this year.
Yeah, I'm still not on the list. I keep sending the letters, Will. They keep coming back, addressee unknown. And, you know, one of them had a restraining order in it. I mean, that's...
Yeah, so, I mean, in the end, we're going to have to rely on our own strength, which gets me to my last talking point. Building a movement. That's something that we can do locally, such as you're doing in Appalachia. But we can also team up with people who have other causes and other concerns, because guess what? As you have said, they do want it all. But we have the power of numbers. Let's not forget our own strength, and perhaps the greedy, the proud, and the foolish will find that they have only managed to merely wake a sleeping giant.
It would be, there is power in numbers, and we often don't even begin to comprehend the amount of that power, Will. Thank you very kindly. It's awfully good to hear from you. I wish we'd had a little more time.
I'll try calling next week. And remember, Bob could still use some funding this week and next week.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a doubling challenge on the table, and call it $70. I can't do the ciphering right now. $70 to go, but...
$70.63 at last check. So if you can chip in the 63 cents, Bob will take it. If you can chip in a dollar, great. If you want to do something, Bob will be happy with it.
We will all be happy, because it will mean we will stay on the air, Will. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. Take care.
Take care.
Our buddy Will from Chicago, we'll have to have a longer talk with him at some point. Will is a very erudite man, and very much devoted to the cause of peace and goodwill. So it's time to get out of here. It really is. Darlene's challenge remains on the table, and $70 and a little bit of change, 7 at 10, 10 at 7, but she will double it, and we really don't like to see those things just fly by the boards. But thanks go out to everybody who did help out this evening. Thanks to David and to Gerald. Thank you to Glenn, and thank you to Reinhard. Reinhard and all of you made things considerably better than they otherwise would have been. And remember, no live program tomorrow night. We'll be cranking up the Malloy program about right this exact moment, 24 hours from now. Thanks, everybody. Have a great evening. Bye now.